It's not dress up, is it? No. Because I play dress up still. I'm a 27-year-old lady. I love dress up.
There's nothing Cassie loves more than trying on clothes she already owns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you come up with little characters for them, and then you get your degree in theater, and then you never use it.
Except to be slightly entertaining on a podcast. Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I don't know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we're going to look at Series 2, Episode 11, Fear Her.
Fearer.
Fear Her.
Fearer.
Fear Her.
For Her.
Fearer.
Fuhrer.
And I know you said last time not to, like, preemptively try to get you in an emotional state about an episode.
Yeah.
But considering that I told you that the last one sucked and you loved it, I'm tempted to tell you this is the second worst episode of Doctor Who. Or in some people's cases, the other worst episode.
Okay.
So I tell you that because I'm really curious how you're going to come out of it now.
Me as well, because part of last episode's charm for me was that I live my life to spite you. And so when you tell me that something isn't very good the first time around, I'm more inclined to enjoy it or to just find something stupid with it. The fact that this is another one of those, I can't do the same bit twice.
Well, I'm not trying to do a bit. I'm genuinely curious.
No, I'm telling you that I am a good comedian. And so unless this happens a third time, I can't do it, bud.
That's fair. I don't really think it happens again. After these two, these two are the low point for the show for you, but then after that, it's pretty much uphill for a long, long time. So let's just move right on to the Cassie Professy, I suppose.
Sure.
I think you saw...
Nope.
Well,
see nothing at the end of the last episode. No, not me.
Yeah, I feel like you did. So now I gotta change one of my Professies.
I didn't.
Okay. Now I'm the one trying to read your mind for a change.
I'm distracted because Monty's being Monty. So
okay.
Cute.
Well, we'll see here. This episode takes place during another important moment in Britain's history. But a slightly more recent moment in Britain's history. From only about the last two decades or so. I mean, really, at the time, it was actually the show's future. Like, it took, like, this episode takes place in 2012. But as you know, the show is set in 2006, so there's a thing they knew that was happening in 2012.
Okay. What can you know that's happening years before it happens?
I mean, that would be some kind of...
Is this some Nostradamus bullshit?
No, it's a planned event.
Because 2012, I think, was also the year that the, quote, Mayan calendar predicted the end of the world. And that, for whatever reason, either my particular high school experience or just my weird, and I say coked out friends, none of us did drugs.
You went to Catholic school. Some of them did drugs.
Okay, but the people that I hung out with, we did not.
Fair. Not yet, anyway.
Our beliefs and our psychoses and paranoias would tell you otherwise. So I'm inclined to say it has something to do with doomsday, end of the world stuff, but it is also on one of those cute multiples of four, which I know has to do with the Olympics.
Alrighty, so you're...
But I don't know which ones happen on which multiples.
Okay.
Right, because it's every 2 years?
Every 2 years. Well, 2 years in alternating seasons. There's the Summer Olympics and the Winter Olympics.
Well, yeah, but every 2 years then. I want to say 2012 was summer.
I believe so.
If I whisper it, it doesn't count. If I'm wrong with the season.
Do you know where it was in 2012?
No, because really dorky, the only experience I have with the, because I don't pay attention much to the Summer Olympics. I was always a Winter Olympics girly. Mm-hmm. Specifically, any snowboarding event or men's speed skating because of Shaun White and Apollo Ohno. It's such a giant, like, talent crush on both of them.
Yeah.
I don't remember where 2012 took place, though. Because if you're saying Britain, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's London. Duh.
Well, is that what you're going with?
I guess so. I don't have any other better answers.
Okay, so Cassie's guess is this takes place during the 2012 London Olympics.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
Alrighty then. And the second thing, I sort of gave that one to you because I don't really know if you caught it or not. And I feel a little unfair with the second one, so I don't mind now if you did.
Well, especially since hashtag justice for Cassie, there are several points I've been robbed of.
Yes. Two episodes ago for the Impossible Planet and Satan Pit, we were discussing whether or not Cassie earned some points. I only really got a couple responses to it, but they were both in Cassie's favor.
Justassy for Cassie.
And since I didn't really get any points to the contrary, I will say that Cassie can add 1 point to her.
Oh my God, really?
To her attribution, yes. Unless some of you hold some really strong opinions that she shouldn't be getting points, in which case, then let me know and I can take that away.
Oh my God, hashtag justassy for Cassie. Thank you so
hashtag
much.
Hashtag no passy for Cassie.
No, that's also good. Currently, my running total is now 24 out of 42 guesses.
Yeah, you're doing really, you're starting to get above that 50% rate.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's see if we can keep that up, because I know this question's a little less fair, but I was really struggling with what would happen here. So in this one, a child gains...
Wait? No, because you said child gains and then took a weird pause, so then okay. I said, oh no, child gains weight. Kids... The kid's fat.
I thought you were saying W-A-I-T.
No. No, I'm just being chubby phobic.
Oh man. That caught me off guard. Anyway. So in this episode, a child gains supernatural powers when they do a particular child's activity.
What the fuck?
Yes, it's a thing we pretty much only, like, adults could do it. It's not like they're prevented from doing it, but the level at which a child does it is different from the way an adult would do it. And in doing so, makes people disappear around their neighborhood.
Oh, no!
Just to get, I feel like maybe, I just didn't want to leave you so open-ended, but there's something she is doing that causes people to disappear from around her neighborhood.
All I can think about is that one episode of The Twilight Zone with, I don't know the actor's name, but he's just a little redhead boy, and he's in so many episodes of The Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. And there's one in particular where somebody, or like the parents are all like talking about like what they're going to do, and one thing leads to another. And at one point, he just goes, and you keep thinking bad thoughts about me. And then he just stares really hard at the guy, and he turns into a jack-in-the-box. Something that children do that adults typically don't, but is not limited to kids. My first knee-jerk reaction, because you said summertime, is chasing ice cream trucks down.
Okay.
I don't think that would cause people to disappear. The truck might. That's bad. That's a bad joke. But playing in a sandbox or okay. like playing pretend.
Okay.
Which are two in this particular instance, I will I will make the definitive answer for one or the other. Because in my head, playing with the sandbox is specifically like building things, sand castles, little drippy castles, if they have a body of water nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Drippy castles was my preferred form of play. It still is, which is why I'm more inclined to say it's playing pretend of some capacity. Like when you and your girlfriends are having a sleepover all together and one of you is the mama cat and you run into the older sister's closet because the mama cat is having her babies, and you very loudly from the other room just start going, wow. I don't know that from experience personally. I was never the mama cat. I was always the baby cat, but.
This is some Cassie Histassi. That doesn't really work for history.
Nah. Histassi does sound like it's hysteria.
Or like a disease of some kind.
Yeah. Can I ask, because you did say this question was a little unfair, can I ask for, am I hot or cold with either of those answers?
You're warm. Okay. You're not like red hot, but I think you're pretty close in a, actually you're close in two different areas, because it is a creative element like sandbox, but it's, but there is an element of pretend to it as well. Specifically,
we are pretending to be carpenters.
We are pretending to play in a sandbox.
Whoa. Because I'm really confident about Summer Olympics.
Okay.
But I also don't know how one would feed into the other.
Do they have to?
Is this Dance Moms? Are we doing competitive child pageantry? That's a U.S. thing. Never mind. We're animals here. Okay, I'm pivoting. It's playing pretend, because I feel like that answer.
Playing pretend. Okay.
It's vague enough that I can argue my way into a point.
Alrighty, so we're gonna say that the answer is that this episode takes place during the summer 2012 London Olympics, and a little child is playing pretend and stealing people from around the neighborhood doing so. Let's find out together as we watch Fear Her.
Fear Her. Fear. Fear Her. What's the word that I'm trying to think of? It's Russian or German or something.
Is it Führer?
Yes!
The word for Hitler?
Oh, no.
It's time to figure out what to eat for dinner every night for the rest of your afterlife. Daunting, isn't it? Not with HelloFresh. It's the number one source for proteins and body parts. You can have all your favorite foods delivered straight to your door, like brains, arms, and even two brains. Simply go to the website, tell them what kind of necromancy revived you, and soon you can be enjoying fresh, delicious flesh without risk of your neighbor shooting you with a shotgun or hitting you with a bat full of nails. The first 100 zombies that sign up will get free fingers for life. That's one hand's worth of digits in every box, but only if you sign up now. HelloFresh is finger-eating good.
And we are back from Fear Her.
Oh no! The Olympic dream! It's dead!
Oh no! Our Olympics! It's broken! So dumb! This episode is so dumb!
I disagree.
So,
In my defense, or in my, like, and I will preface this with saying that I, too, was a lonely kid that liked to draw. I did not have a demon father, thankfully, but my opinion of this episode is peppered by the fact that I, too, was one of the, like, I was a joy to have in class and was the designated art kid.
Yeah, it's...
So we will carry this conversation on going off the knowledge that I see a lot of myself in Chloe Webber.
Yes. Why are we whispering? I don't understand why we're doing that all the time.
It's only the alien that whispers, the jellyfish-like alien.
Which I've also been doing a lot of research on. They're fucking real, anyways.
Yeah, so I think the main thing that really hurts this episode is that it was meant to take place next season, but the episode that was supposed to come here fell apart, and so they very hastily was like, what's the script we have finished right now?
I mean, that's...
And so this script was supposed to have, like, another year's worth of, like, passes over it.
See, because I know that you... And first of all, we'll address this now before we move on any further. I was correct about the London Olympics.
Yes, correct about the London Olympics, but it was wrong about playing pretend. This was...
Yeah, I can't. I can't really argue my point.
Yeah,
she was... If she had drawn her pictures of herself playing with the other children, mm-hmm. or if that was the premise, is like she is drawing them
to like be her friend, to like hang out
yeah
with.
Like, oh, here, look, it's
I've drawn you and now I've drawn.
It's like that drawing that Haley has framed from when she was five, the me and somebody. it wasn't that, so I will not argue, just Dassey for Cassie, and say that I was wrong in that.
Yeah,
moment.
If it had been
and
like
I
she...
And I will also say, though, that drawing is not exclusive to children, Zach.
And I said in the beginning that it was not exclusive to children, but the specific, like, doodling, colored pencil, like, teeth that are all the same size kind of drawing that she
yeah,
was doing.
Yeah, that's because that's how children draw. Yeah. Have you ever seen a kid draw a realistic-looking human face? No! They're all perfect circles with scary teeth and fucked-up eyes. Every yeah. kid drawing is that.
Yeah, that's why I was like, adults do it too, but the way adults do it is very different. Like
it's called being skilled and talented when you're an adult.
Yeah, but I also think that we also don't think of most adults doing that, but we can picture most kids doing that, if that makes sense.
I suppose you're arguing with an artist, dude.
That's fair.
So even if you had made the argument of, oh, it's coloring with colored pencils and crayons. I have a box of 164 crayons in my possession right now. Do you not think I draw with those?
Fair enough. So
this is because we are artistic in our own ways. So we will not agree on anything having to do with art because you do not draw.
Fair enough.
Or paint. That is not your creative outlet. Yeah,
I'm a digital media kind of guy.
Yeah, which is witchcraft to me. I don't understand. All I know is that I sit down, record some stuff, and then it goes into the ether.
But the reason I bring up that it was because you could tell there's a lot of parts where things are just kind of rushed.
I liked this episode just because I was wrong, or I was correct. I do spite you a lot. I pick my favorites based off of if you do or do not like them. So I genuinely did enjoy this episode. There were a lot of things, though, that just did not make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like I did really like the element of the father being not an awesome dude, and they were happy when he died in a car crash, which is there any other way fathers die in this show? Is that the only one that is it a chronic illness in Doctor Who that dads only die via other cars?
they're all car dads, and therefore you live by the car and die by the car,
I guess. And I like the justification that Chloe feels so alone because her mom just didn't talk about it. They didn't discuss the father's death. That was something that she tried to push aside and move on from, and that clearly was not the case. I do like that because that is something that is common, mm-hmm. I've noticed, just in life, and, you know, I don't want to give out names, but, you know, it's something that is very prevalent. And so I did like that element of she is being haunted by her, like, the memory of her father.
Yeah.
The scary fucking drawing in her closet.
That with his with his fist clenched, ready to punch.
Oh my god, demon, demon, evil, bad. Demon class of drawing, evil, bad. So there was a part of me that was like, ooh, yeah, that's like, you could make, there is a version of this where they all tie, everything all ties together, and she's drawing out things that she is like manifesting, which I think would make more sense if she was drawing pictures of herself playing with the other children.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, her drawing these pictures are making, or like her drawing pictures of her playing with the children, and something about the drawings manifesting or making children not manifest, vanish. I guess that's the opposite of manifest, huh? Vanishing destiny.
Vanifest.
It's that damn alien that really makes this a Doctor Who episode, and I respect and understand that. But then when you start throwing all of these ideas together in a blender with the Olympics and the Olympic dream and the torch.
Oh, God.
And the bolt of lightning that we don't see hitting the runner that makes him incapacitated, which we'll talk about that later. There's a lot of things going on here that individually I think are very decent ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Together don't work in the way that I think they intended.
Yeah, because you could tell, well, there's a few things that really hamper it. I think the biggest thing is that a lot of the ends when they get tied up just kind of stop. Like the alien just like leaves. Like I know why, it's because the spaceship activates, but it really is just like she was about to do a great big thing and then suddenly went, the plot is done with me, goodbye. Bleh. And then when the dad comes to life at the end.
It's because this happens in less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like a better 3/4 of the episode is dedicated to figuring out this mystery, which, hey, it gave it time to breathe. But the amount of time that they gave it to breathe warrants this maybe even being like a 2-parter.
Yeah.
If they had wanted to really dive into child psychology and art therapy.
And I also feel like speaking of the child, I feel like part of the problem with this episode is that the actress playing Chloe Weber cannot act. Which,
she's,
to be fair,
kid.
Most kids can't.
I think that they hired her because she could do the freaky thing with her eyes where they roll into the back of her head, which is scary. I hate it.
Yeah.
I wish I could do it. Yeah, no, it's not just rolling up. It's like really making them. I guess you just have to have larger eyeballs, and I don't have that.
Yeah,
or
I guess
because I'm Asian. I've never seen an Asian person do it. That's my theory.
Yeah, so much of it for me is just, and there was some weird choices too that they had them do. Like the dad's like lines is just, I'm going to come and hurt you, Chloe. I'm coming to hurt you. Like, it's that he, one, doesn't sound, it. I can understand that's coming from a child's perspective. Like, that's where that, like, feeling is coming from. But the voice actor they have just sort of sounds like a professional wrestler.
Chloe, I'm coming.
I can't.
I'm coming.
I can't.
I'm coming.
Mommy.
Chloe. I'm going to come and hurt you, Chloe. I'm going to come down there and I'm going to break you over my knee. Ooh, yeah.
The other thing that I don't want to say that I had an issue with it, but it did make me cock my head a little bit to the side, is that there does feel like a very thin veil of racism as well, where at one point when everybody in the neighborhood is talking about the children disappearing, and they said,
Why don't we
start with him? There's been all sorts like him in this street day and night.
And they point specifically to the black guy, but they're referring specifically to the council members.
Yeah, the city.
Getting the area set up for the torch to run through.
Yeah.
But it was the specificity of your people. And I went,
whoa.
This feels.
It feels very weird, especially because the.
And then especially since. I will dub her the antagonist just for ease.
The Weber family.
Yeah, but they are also the only black people in that neighborhood.
Yeah, it's just, it's a little...
Like, there's some things like that where it's like, this feels
Like an oversight, at the very least.
Yeah, like somebody, when they were going through the many passes of this script, never once did they stop to think, maybe we should not make the Weber family black.
Maybe we should just have some more black people on this neighborhood.
Maybe we should add more ethnicities into this neighborhood, so not everybody is white in this perfect suburb, except for the one family that keeps fucking shit up that just so happened to be not white. Like that, it just it feels a certain way, and I don't think it was intended to be.
Yeah.
Bearing that in mind, I did love the one council member being upset about or being so proud of his work. And it's a secret formula we use. It's so smooth, like a baby's butt. That's a council van. Get out of the council van. You took a pickaxe out of the council van.
You just took a council axe out of a council van, and now you're tearing up a council road.
Yeah, I love that. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's a good, and the actor does a good job with that too.
Yeah,
like it's not just a good line; it's performed well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Kudos to this particular that actor for
another moment that I think both of us enjoyed was actually near the very beginning when the Doctor first lands the TARDIS.
Oh yeah,
he lands it between like two dumpsters, basically. But the door is facing one of the dumpsters.
I wrote down that's not pertinent to the episode. That in no means was like foreshadowing, but it was a. It is something I've always wondered if the TARDIS could do, and now I have that answer.
Well, what's funny to me is I like, because you have a good idea at this point, that the Doctor is not great at piloting the TARDIS. So there's a part of me that feels like as soon as it disappeared, they went on like a season's worth of adventures and then came back.
Yeah. Well, because my understanding, at least, was that the TARDIS pilots herself.
More or less, yeah.
So I think that was the TARDIS fucking with the Doctor.
A little bit. I mean, it's also a good, like, tone setter. It tells you this is not meant to be a serious episode, although that also makes it weird why it's about child abuse.
Child abuse, possession?
Yeah, it's got a little bit of The Exorcist in it.
Yeah.
It's a little tonally jarring, where it's like, I think it wanted to be...
It's muddy. Like, it just feels kind of like... Drawing in an artist reference. It's like when you're...
pun intended.
Yeah. No, it's like when you're painting and you're using a bunch of this just happened to me the other day. I was painting specifically like a blue sky with a golden sun. After a while, because everything was blue and yellow and I put a little bit of green, the water just kind of turned red somehow. It was like a mauve-y sort of pink. That has everything to do with color theory, but it was that I spent a fair deal of my time painting wondering how I could have accidentally mistook my paint water for my LaCroix, and also how all of these colors together just make like a dirty pink. And that's kind of how I feel about this episode, is how do all of these elements come together to just make something that feels so muted.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the ideas are good.
Yeah, like I said, it's...
Like, they're very good.
It's a rushed script. It was meant to have another year's worth of, like,
especially
thought put
since
into it.
We had a moment of Detective Rose going off and doing her own investigative work.
Because this is, I think, the first episode where the Doctor gets pulled away. And the companion has to do stuff on their own. Like, there are episodes where they have to split up.
Christmas episode.
That's fair. The Christmas episode. So it was the first one of this season, at least.
Christmas episode was this season.
So it depends on how you count it. But
we're counting it is that its part.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's one. It is sort of a rare moment where the Doctor gets, like, fully pulled away.
Well, because it wasn't even... It was before all of that, though. It was at the very tip-top of the episode when they're starting to walk around in this neighborhood. Rose is the first one to notice all of the missing children posters and comments on it as just the general, like, "Nah, man, that's awful. Who would do such a thing?"
Mm-hmm.
Because she's empathetic towards parents missing their children. Because mm-hmm. I'm sure that struck some kind of chord with her. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily being a missing child. She's a full-grown adult and she can call her mom.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be some sort of small thing of like, oh, man, that really sucks. Those poor parents. I should call my mom. Like that sort of train of thought. And the doctor kind of glosses over that. And I forget what he's distracted. Oh, no, he's talking about the Olympics.
Yeah.
He's talking specifically about the Greek Olympics and then the, like, 1938
Cambridge Olympics, I think. Wimbledon?
Wimbledon, yes. Right? Yeah, that's what it is.
And possibly. I've forgotten as well.
Editing Zach, figure it out.
But... Wembley, 1948. I loved it so much. I went back and watched it all over again.
But he's distracted and she's immediately on the case. As soon as they are in the neighborhood talking to parents and figuring stuff out, she is trying to figure out what the fuck is going on by notating how much colder it is in the area.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor is the one that picks up on the weird, like, ionic smell, which, weirdly enough, I get what he's talking about. Also, I just realized we never saw the cat get freed from the drawing. Super not important, but also very important because it's an orange cat. And that's like a big deal for
me. Also, this doctor devastated you and said that he's not a cat person.
Oh my God, Davey Tenney, breaking my heart.
No, I'm not really a cat person.
Not a cat person? Are you kidding me? What? How was he not? Eccleston would have been a cat person.
David Tennant is too much of like, I guess he's like a Labrador too much.
I was going to say, David Tennant is a cat. I think that's the issue.
Well, David Tennant's a cat. His doctor, however, I think is more of like a puppo.
Not a golden retriever, because golden retrievers usually like cats.
Yeah, he's got maybe like a small dog energy.
Yeah, he's maybe like a... I don't know. What kind of dog is... Tangent. New bit. What kind of dog is this doctor?
Who is this doctor?
Whoa. Who is my doctor? Woof. What dog is this doctor? Let's see. Where this is the new... This is the podcast now, Zach. I think you're onto something with small dog. I don't think Chihuahua.
Yeah, maybe not Chihuahua, but... I mean, like a little wiener dog, like a little dachshund.
Ooh, I don't want it to. This isn't a race thing. He could be a corgi because they are a little bit pompous.
Or like a Yorkshire Terrier.
Yeah, like I think I'm onto something though with corgi, because corgis in dog world are like, they're very likable. They're very easy to get along with, but they also are a little conceited and like, they're kind of divas and you have to take them to the groomer to get trimmed and to get brushed and defluffed and all of that. And a lot of people don't realize how much maintenance they are. Same with Labradoodles. Anybody thinking about getting a dog, do not fucking get a Labradoodle unless you're ready to pay so much money for the groomers, because Labradoodles have, I think I've had this conversation before on this podcast or I'm having deja vu. Labradoodles technically have like hair. They have kinky, like naturally curly hair. And if you're familiar at all with like naturally curly hair, there's a lot of maintenance that goes into it. And that's just on a person's head. On an entire dog's body, if you don't maintain it correctly, it gets matted and coiled up and it can create like very like tense, like painful spots, like painful patches on the dog's skin. And a lot of people don't realize that they have this type of hair because they go, oh, it's a combination of a Labrador Retriever and a poodle. That's a great family dog. And they are, and they're hyperallergenic. But you cannot get one of those dogs if you want a low maintenance dog, because they are not. They are hundreds of dollars in groomers. And at the very least, like every other day, you need to be brushing and maintaining this dog's fur. The doctor is not a Labradoodle. I'm going with Corgi.
Yeah, I think Corgi's a good pick. I was gonna say the doctor does not have curly kinky hair. He just uses some hair gel and he's good to go.
Yeah, he's been working on back combing it.
So I think we're gonna go with Corgi on this one.
A Welsh corgi, specifically. I'm writing it down because I like this bit, and now we need to go back and retroactively figure out what Eccleston is.
We already said he's a cat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the cat.
I was going to say he could also be a wiener dog, but yeah, no, Eccleston is a cat.
I mean, actually, if we're going to talk about Eccleston, I feel like he might be a greyhound.
Ooh. Ooh, what are those ones? Or like a borzoi?
I don't know what a borzoi is.
For you. That's a borzoi. They're actually really awesome dogs. Also, light maintenance for those, just because they do have the longer hair.
Yeah, Christopher Eccleston is definitely a low maintenance doctor. That is a guy who gets a buzz cut and wears a leather jacket, and that's he's done.
He could be.
He feels like a hunting dog.
I hesitate to say a greyhound just because for maintenance aesthetically, not a lot of maintenance, but you do need to exercise them regularly because they are big dog who like to run. Big dog who bred to run. Greyhound racing, not the greatest thing, but alternatively, he could be a little Italian greyhound.
Yeah.
So that way he's just sitting up and... Because I really love the idea of Rose just holding this little Eccleston Italian greyhound.
We've also established that the companion, we already know that Rose is a Yorkshire Terrier.
Yeah.
So we saw that in another universe.
That's decided for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Eccleston is an Iggy.
Well, all right then. Yeah. And that ends this segment. Who is my dog turn?
Woof!
We'll have to revisit that segment when we get to Matt Smith.
I'm so excited now.
We'll get a few episodes in every time, so we won't do it right away. But did you like the squiggle creature that they had? The
jellyfish alien?
No, not the jellyfish alien. When she just like...
Oh my god, the doodle bob?
Yeah, she just angrily scribbles a doodle and it just becomes alive.
And it ends up in their garage?
Yeah, and then it's somehow...
And actually, it's not even clear if it's their garage. It's just a garage.
Yeah, and it's also made of pencil still.
Doodle bob! I know, my theory was that it was a magic pencil at first. Because I went, this is too easy. We've seen this before. This is... Punch Bob.
You bringing up Doodle Bob does make me kind of wish the Isolus was in her head going, Emoy noiny, meiny, noiny, moiny.
You don't know if it was.
Instead of the little whispering it was doing.
You don't know. It could have been, and she was just translating it. Yeah.
You doodle. Me, Chloe Webber. Me, I mean, I.
I also want to just bring up the part that has always, always, always sat with me as being so dumb.
Mm.
The spaceship is powered by love.
CS, hi, as your local lonely child here, I loved that. Loved it.
Like I get what they were doing is that it's like powered by the warmth of togetherness.
Here's the thing. I like that it needs warm. Like that, for whatever reason, I was like, yeah, that really...
Well, because heat is a power source.
That really makes sense. It's the fact that it wasn't... It's not like, oh, it needs to be surrounded by people. That's why it needs to end up in the Olympic Stadium. Because if that was the logic, makes perfect fucking sense that that the doctor just... happens to be in that area and can finish the rest of the torch run when the other guy is struck by lightning and unable to continue. Fucking when did that happen and why did we miss that? That sounds important.
Yeah, it just cuts back to the TV and the guy who's running the torch.
The torchbearer seems to be in a bit of trouble. We did see a flash of lightning earlier that seemed to strike him. Maybe he's injured. He's definitely in trouble. This mean that the Olympic dream is dead.
And also, if a stadium of 80,000 people just disappears, don't you think that that would be what you're talking about for the rest of your segment? Is fucking where did these people go? 80,000 people did not simultaneously get up and jump to their cars.
Or even weirder, if you're one of those 80,000 people, are you even going to focus on the Olympics anymore?
Yeah.
You're like, hey, weren't we all stick figures like a minute ago?
If I was momentary, that was the other thing is that when everybody's a drawing, because in the logic of the show, The drawings are cognizant of what's going on in the room or in the space. At the very least, you could argue that they are on some kind of psychic level with the Isolas.
Yes.
Fine. Fair. The show has wacky logic. We can go with that. I'll buy into that. By that logic, then the drawings know that they are drawings. So when they are no longer drawings, don't you think they'd be a little bit confused?
Right.
And not just like, oh boy, I'm back to playing soccer. Let me just jump out of this, like, jump into this alleyway. That one kid who definitely looks like he just rolled out of bed. That was not a hairstyle, sweetie. That was messy.
Maybe I need to go back and revisit, but I'm pretty sure they said that when he disappeared, he was riding his bike.
Yes, he was.
And so there's a part of me that was like, where the fuck did his bike go?
There was a different kid on a bike later on. I don't know if it was the same kid. He didn't have messy, ratty hair, so I don't think it was.
I almost wish that after he came in, the bike appeared right after him and just like fell on him.
Yeah, that would have been hilarious. Why not? This episode is stupid silly, so we can have a little bit of slapstick. But that's just one of those little nitpicky things, because I don't think that they would do any close-ups of people in the audience being like, what happened?
Yeah, but it's also like,
but they also did notate that the two other like reporters that were, or like the two other commentators also vanished. So they could have had something to say. Like they could have done like a pan over to them being like, oh, that was like, well, that was odd, wasn't it? Ha 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 ha. Back to the Olympics.
Yeah, or, you know, not even ignoring that point, wouldn't the Olympics have a second runner? They're not just going to let a dude come and pick it up. Like, they don't know who the doctor is. He just picks it up and
he
goes.
He flashed the psychic papers saying that I am a good runner, and they went, okay.
But you're wearing a trench coat. Don't worry about it. Yes, I am. Just Phineas and Ferb it.
Oh my god, the doctor does have big Phineas and Ferb logic, don't he?
And then he, oh, so here's...
Oh my god, wait, hold on. Dan Povenmire, if you're out there, if you ever hear this, please, Doctor Who, Phineas and Ferb universe, smoosh together.
They have a Doctor Who pastiche in the Phineas and Ferbiverse.
Oh my god, what is it?
God, I'm blanking on its name. Hang on. This is Editing Zach here, making a note that I was thinking of Dr. Zone from Milo Murphy's Law, which, while not Phineas and Ferb, does take place in the same universe as Phineas and Ferb, so I think it still counts. Anyway, back to the podcast.
But also, there was one other little tidbit that was just kind of glazed over. And I'm sure that it, because you just very casually whipped out a little nugget of knowledge that I wasn't aware of. The doctor saying, I was a dad once. They're just going to drop that little nugget of doctor of time. I was trying to figure out the term I used. They're just going to drop that little nugget of Time Lord lore without any follow up.
Yeah. One of the doctors.
Do they talk about that ever again?
Yes. They bring up his family from time to time. Primarily because one of the first companions that the first, like, really, I think it's the first character you see in Doctor Who is the Doctor's granddaughter, Susan. She was sort of the show's original premise was that you had her and her grandfather and her two teachers.
Wait, so it was a grandfather and his grandchild going on alien adventures?
Yeah, well, I mean, the premise was always...
So it was Rick and Morty.
The premise was always that they were aliens. Yeah, Rick and Morty has certainly aped this. But then, and the additional premise of the show is that they went along with her two teachers, her science teacher and her history teacher, and that was why they traveled in space and time. Because you had the history teacher to tell you about the history stuff and the science teacher to tell you about the science fiction stuff.
It just sounds like an after-school special.
That was basically how they pitched it to the BBC at the time.
Oh, okay.
It was this mix of adventure and education entertainment for kids, and that was basically how they got it greenlit, because the people in charge of the show was... The person showrunning it in the 60s was a woman. So they sort of had to like slip it in there. And then the Daleks took over and all that went out the window.
Daleks.
Oh, but yes, The doctor has, we know the doctor has a granddaughter. I am to this day shocked they have not brought her back because that actress is still alive.
Oh my goodness. She is
very old. She's in her, I think, her late 70s.
Yeah, like, she would have to be.
How have you not fished her out to have her regenerate at some point?
It's very possible that she doesn't want to.
She still plays Susan.
Oh, fuck. Bring her on.
I've told you about the audio dramas. When they have Susan on, she's the one playing her.
Fuck.
Sure, she sounds like a 70-year-old Susan, but who cares? It's the same actress. Like, you know she's
Justice for Susan.
I don't understand how they've whiffed that for so many seasons of this show.
I mean, to be fair, there are some seasons of the show that you haven't seen. Right? This most recent one.
No, I've seen the most recent stuff.
Oh, well, never mind.
At the when we started this podcast, I was behind, but I've since caught up. There are some seasons of the classic show I haven't seen yet. The only reason I can think that they haven't brought her back yet is because in her last story, she technically got stranded in a parallel universe. The story that she ends on is an episode where the Daleks invade Earth in, I believe it's 2012. Like, it's not...
Is it same parallel universe like Mickey's parallel universe?
Yes.
Okay.
It wasn't necessarily meant to be a parallel universe, but now the time from that invasion has passed. And so we as viewers know that that's a parallel Earth now because that's not what happened.
But, so if you're going off of the logic of the show, then that it's hard to get to that parallel universe.
Exactly. And there's also just the little squeakiness of part of why he left is because she found a boyfriend. And he's like, you can stay with him now. You've known each other for like 3 days, and this is a post-apocalyptic hellscape, but you're good. Bye, sweetie. There's a lot of like, you could probably mine a good story out of that, but it would require you to really address that the doctor kind of sucks sometimes.
Yeah. Plus, at this point, he's regenerated so often, there's a good chance that even she would be like, you're not. You could be my grandfather, and I respect that you technically are, but mm-hmm. you do not look like him, you do not sound like him, you do not act like him.
Yeah, if we ever visit the first doctor, I have a story picked out because it's nothing but dudes in suits.
Oh, hell yeah, I love that.
It's that, and it's black and white, and it's kind of slow, but it's so goofy, I think you might enjoy it. We'll hopefully get to that at some point.
It can be like a little treat.
Yeah, a little treato.
Treato?
But we should probably get back to this episode now that we've gotten this little tangent. This back half has so many tangents. We got the dog thing. We've now got this thing with Susan.
It's good! No, but going back to what I was talking about of the drawings, recognizing that they are drawings. The closet.
Yeah, the closet. Oof. Just is a big, scary man.
A big shadow man, which there is
red eyes.
There is a part of me that is pleased with the fact that they don't actually show him, because I feel like that's a point that just doesn't need to be driven in any.
Well, since we know that the squiggle creature looks like a big squiggle.
Ew.
There's a real chance that he would just come out looking like a piece of drawn on drywall.
Mioi, mioi.
Yeah, he would look like Doodle Bob. And so you're like, yeah. I feel like he probably loses a little bit of his menace if he comes down looking like angry bearded Doodle Bob.
I'm good. I'm good not having seen him. But one thing that I was really happy with is that Chloe and her mom vanquish.
Yeah.
They are the ones that are able to get rid of him.
Yeah.
The doctor has nothing to do with that. Even Rose is not really helpful because the doors are locked and she can't get into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the first times that we've seen victims.
Which does just raise the question as to how did he lock those doors? Does being drawing make you psychic?
I mean, I was going based off of this has, and I know that you disagree with me on... I know that you'll disagree with me on this point. It did have a little bit of like a poltergeist sort of energy of if you manifest this energy and if Chloe had created this like evil entity of her father and drew mm-hmm. his visage in her closet,
mm-hmm.
that there is a good chance that, or you can argue the fact that this could have then been some kind of demonic, evil poltergeist type thing.
I mean, I don't totally disagree with you there. I might disagree that it is specifically a demon, but I can agree that Chloe has provided him attributes that are now real because she drew them into him. She drew them into them,
and they, because your psychic energy is extremely strong,
mm-hmm.
like that, you know,
especially when enhanced by an alien flower jellyfish.
Exactly. So in this particular context, if you have flower alien jellyfish energy, psychic powers, and have so much fear, because fear is one of the most like palpable, like, you know, you that's not even like exclusive to ghosts or like spirits in any capacity. If somebody or something is afraid, you know it. Like, mm-hmm. you can feel it in the room when people are afraid or anxious or scared. So in this particular context, because Chloe and her mother are both anxious and afraid and scared, I think that you could argue that the psychic powers then could be imbued into Devil Closet Daddy.
I feel like Devil Closet Daddy has a way different connotation closet than what actually
Devil
happens.
Devil Daddy.
That still sounds the same.
Hmm. Anyways. But I like that they were able to save themselves.
Yeah.
It wasn't Rose coming in to save the day. It wasn't the doctor coming in with some fucking magic screwdriver and saying, ah, here, let me just make it disappear. It was them coming together and resolving the issue of Chloe feeling alone.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that moment, she recognized that she wasn't alone.
Mm-hmm.
And her mom recognized that she wasn't alone. And they came together and they had each other. That's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Minus the fact that the dad doesn't make a lot of sense.
And it's also just, it's also a little undercut by them singing the Kookaburra song together.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a choice. It's an interesting choice.
And
I can talk the dad into making sense all day long. But at the end of the day, it's the fact that these two people, I refer to them as like the victims of this scenario, the victims of this situation,
mm-hmm.
were able to help themselves. They did not need somebody to come in and save them.
Yeah, it was the story that brought them together. It was not
yes.
the characters like forcing something.
Appreciate
on them.
That.
So a couple little fun facts about this episode that I think you'll enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first episode since The Empty Child / The Doctor Dan- or the first story since The Empty Child / The Doctor Dances where everybody lives.
Hey, you're right.
Just this twice, Rose. Everybody lives.
Mm-hmm.
Except
for the cat, because we didn't see where the cat went.
Well, he's off doing cat things.
Cat could have liked being a drawing.
Cat will stroll back in through the drawing and just be like,
"Prow, prow." Go back into the box.
Where is everybody?
Oh no. What has happened? I was safe on paper, and now I'm back in the real world. All orange cats sound like magic.
So you were really getting a kick out of David Tennant doing the Olympic torch run.
Oh my god, it's just because the announcer goes, "The Olympic dream is dead." And I wish that was me exaggerating. That's what he says.
I feel like the Olympic dream was dead when 80,000 people, including the people who were the athletes for the Olympics, disappeared.
Yeah. 80,000 spectators and 30,000 athletes gone.
Yeah.
How the athletes also disappeared and not the single reporter, I don't know.
He was off site in the BBC studio.
I suppose so.
The reason I bring it up is because of this episode, there was a petition to have David Tennant as the doctor actually be the person who carries the torch in the 2012 London Olympics.
Oh, that would have been fun.
And the doctor did carry the torch in the 2012 London Olympics, but it wasn't David Tennant, it was Matt Smith.
Is that because he was the doctor at the time?
Yes.
Point? Okay, well.
So I'm sure that it was the BBC trying to, like,
advertise.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, we can advertise the doctor doing it. Not I don't know if it was just executives weren't thinking about,
like, the timeline of the show.
Well, the part of what made it charming was that it was making an episode real. It wasn't just about, like, the novelty of the doctor doing it. It was specifically about trying to realize this moment from the show. Especially because the only way that they could have really done that is if they had had a different guy who then willingly gets struck by lightning off camera.
Yeah, off camera. No sound either.
And no storm clouds after either. It's, yeah. There's fireworks going on. The storm is coming. The storm hasn't come yet. The storm is coming.
Do you think the doctor did it on purpose so he could be the person to run the torch up?
Yeah, it certainly raises some questions. We'll have to investigate the doctor on that one a little bit.
Because now that we've put it out in that context, I think the doctor did this on purpose. With the intention of getting the weird little, like, Kinder Egg alien pod to the Olympic torch fire pit.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just called the torch? Like the big one?
I don't know. I don't know what it's called.
Well, we'll call it the Olympic fire pit then.
The Olympic campfire.
Yeah. If the doctor knew, which in according to the drawing that he somehow did in the drawing when he was.
He came in with a pencil. He had one in his pocket.
There was color though. He has one of those clicky pens.
He stole a bunch of Chloe's colored pencils before she drew him.
Might have. But even as a drawing, he knew that that was the answer. So I think that the doctor is the one that incapacitated the runner.
Clobbered him on the head with the torch.
And then just said, oh no, he's been struck by lightning.
Oh no, our Olympic runner.
He's dead. Broken. Yeah. But yeah, a storm is coming.
Yeah, how did you like that little moment at the end where Rose is just like, nothing's ever going to tear us apart, Doctor. Never, ever, forever, never. And he's like,
don't say never, forever, never, ever.
Yeah, there's a storm coming. Look at the fireworks. There's a storm coming.
And I think my response to that was, I smell a two-parter.
Yes, because the next episodes we're looking at are the two-part finale of this season.
Does that mean Rose is gone at the end of this?
I guess you'll have to find out.
Oh, man.
We will find out together on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Woof!
We should really come up with a name for you guys as like a unit. Why don't you pitch me some ideas at our socials? You can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, or Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. If you like this episode, please give us a like or 5 stars or send us a carrier pigeon with a nice note, whatever's easiest for you. Next, we'll be wrapping up Series 2 with a look at the Army of Ghosts and Doomsday. Look forward to next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.